This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Smart Food Popcorn. Some decisions aren't the best, like skipping ahead in your favorite podcast. Think of all the banter you'll miss, the lore in the making. Luckily, Smart Food Popcorn is a no-brainer. Deliciously tasty and available in a variety of fun flavors. It's a smart decision every time. Smart Food. Add smart. To learn more, visit smartfood.com.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
Welcome to the BBC Music Magazine podcast. I'm Oliver Condy, the magazine's editor, and with me, scattered to two other corners of the southwest of England, are reviews editor Michael Beek and editorial assistant Freya Parr.
Hello.
Hello.
So this is actually the second episode we've done remotely, thanks to the wonders of Microsoft Teams and smartphones. It also marks the second issue we've remotely sent to press. So, Michael and Freya, what have been the particular challenges of putting the magazine together without actually being in the office?
Well, for me, certainly, as reviews editor, it's not having any CDs to look at or deal with or send out. So managed to commission a whole issue with no CDs for reviews. So I'm quite pleased with that.
Superb
That's
effort.
Quite an achievement, actually. Yeah, that is quite an achievement. I think we kind of assume that everything is going digital or has already gone digital in the classical music world. But actually, because 80% of the copies sold are physical product, I think there's a little bit of a sort of a lag behind of critics, of record labels, of everyone sort of dealing efficiently with digital files. So this may well be the making of it.
It really could be. Yeah, my life has been about transferring files and downloading files.
How's the internet connection been for that? Ropey.
Not too bad. But ropey occasionally, but we've done it. We've done an issue, so on with the next.
I feel like technologically it's actually been quite seamless, but I do feel as though I'm getting very much a sort of sense of screen fatigue from spending too much time, because now I think in the evenings and the mornings I'm spending all my spare time catching up with friends on more video chats, and it's like, actually I need to just get away from the screens. But I think otherwise it's been quite good. The only other problem is not being able to go and directly speak to people in other departments in particular, so like, you know, production or marketing, usually you can just pop upstairs and have a very quick chat, whereas now everything has to be sort of typed out and considered, and it's a little more sluggish. But we've now done two magazines remotely, and I don't think there are too many errors.
I mean, the biggest lesson I've learned so much is not to sort of worry about the small stuff as much, and actually to look at the bigger picture. Because if you do the small stuff and you do really double down and make sure that everything is dotted and crossed, you know, to the nth degree. You can drive yourself crazy in this new world. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, having come down on last Sunday to look after my 5-year-old has added an extra an extra pressure, because of course 5-year-olds don't necessarily need education the whole time, but they do need attention.
Yeah.
So one has to sort of do a podcast and then it's back to phonics. So that's fun, isn't it?
Endless swapping of hats of which thing you should be focusing on next.
Indeed. So last week we sent the June issue of the magazine to press, and it'll be out now on the newsstands itself, an achievement in this new world. And it's actually the BBC Music Magazine Awards special. So we were due to hold the ceremony at King's Place in London on the 20th of April. And it's a moment when we get the sort of whole classical music record industry together to celebrate their incredible work over the past year. And of course, we would have been awarding prizes in person to the recordings that you all voted for our readers, as well as a few special awards along the way. But we're still having the awards, both in the magazine, online, on social media, and hopefully you'll see a few reports pop up in the press here and there. But before we talk about the awards, let's head to music news. So, as per last month, there's only one real story, which is coronavirus. But within that, there are little sort of gems to celebrate musicians who have gone really beyond the call of duty to continue bringing music to us all. And let's not forget good old Radio 3, who set up studios in their homes with duvets and dogs and houseplants and various bits and bobs. Freya, what's been sort of the highlight of online musical activities for you?
Well, there's been lots. As I mentioned, I'm getting a little bit of screen fatigue, but every time I turn on Instagram at the moment, I seem to be getting another notification of another live concert, which is really nice to sort of see flashes of from various kind of artists and orchestras. But this weekend, so actually this will be happening, this will have happened by the time this podcast comes out, but obviously Young Musician is back, BBC Young Musician. So I'm really looking forward to that, having a nice programme to watch on a Sunday afternoon. So that's very exciting. And then also there'll be the Bang on a Can Marathon, which is... that's on the 3rd of May, and I'm not sure whether that'll be available to watch afterwards, but I know that they're also opening up their archives from the last 33 years as well, called Canland. But yeah, the marathon kind of involves, it's 6 hours, 26 performers, and Meredith Monk is opening it with a probably very experimental and wacky solo performance. So it's going to be lots of great works by newer contemporary composers. So that's, I'm really looking forward to that, hopefully when I have a bit of time away from the screens for a while.
Yeah. Indeed. Michael, is there anything that you've seen over the past sort of few weeks that has really sort of captured your imagination?
Yeah, definitely. There's been regular Friday afternoon events called Art Saves Us, which has been supported by Julian Lloyd Webber. Mm. It's a whole mix of things, music, poetry, art, online on a Friday afternoon, and you pay £1 to access it, and the money goes to NHS charities. So it's doing good, and it's entertaining and sort of, you know, soul food, which is what we need.
Yeah, fantastic. I watched the Met Opera Gala last week,
oh, yeah,
which was, you know, very touching, very large, kind of ambitious, over 40 singers, some accompanists as well, maintaining safe social distancing. And it worked really well. I mean, some internet connections were better than others, but on the whole, they were, you know, it may be a little glitchy, but it really wasn't. It really was pretty impressive, you know, from Bryn Terfel's Welsh Home to Roberto Alagna, over in the Parisian suburbs and beyond, you know. Wow. it was really fun. So.
It's quite nice being able to sit down and listen when you think how many other people are sitting down and watching and listening something at the same time. It's like you can come together from all corners of the earth.
Exactly.
Yeah. But there was something we've reported in the magazine, which is away from sort of practicing sort of music making itself, is the mezzo-soprano Jennifer Johnston has come up with the idea for raising money for Help Musicians UK, which of course musicians are struggling terribly in this situation. But she's invited musicians to help her compile an online cookbook, and it's called Notes from Musicians' Kitchens. And we've got things like Natalie Stutzman's Quiche Lorraine, and we've got percussionist Colin Curry's Storn Away Black Pudding Risotto, and we've got Stephen Huff's Ambitious Porridge with Smarties. So whole culinary range, and all you have to do is subscribe for just £10. Go to notesfrommusicianskitchens.com, pay £10, and you can look at all these recipes from these wonderful musicians. So it sounds really fun, actually. I'm looking forward to trying
it. Really great. Absolutely. I'm disappointed Colin Curry isn't making a curry, though.
I know, I just thought the same thing. Curry's curry. Missed opportunity there.
That would have been good.
Missed opportunity, yes.
Yes, he might have thought of it himself, though, at the time. He didn't want to be stereotyped.
Can't blame him.
Excellent.
That's great. Thing.
Freya, you were going to talk about the NHS tickets, weren't you? Because that's really worthwhile.
Yes. So obviously, quite a few of these kind of online concerts are helping support musicians, but there's actually been a few initiatives to help to support the NHS as well. So St John Smith Square have started a pay it forward scheme. So basically, you know, you donate the cost of a ticket, and then whenever lockdown ends, whenever that may be, that ticket will go to someone from the NHS staff, which is a really good idea because it kind of also helps support St John Smith Square while they're closed and helps keep it going. And also in other NHS news, Anna Lapwood has started the NHS Chorus 19, which kind of is a choir that she set up with some friends from Cambridgeshire who are doctors as well. And they have kind of started this choir for the NHS, which is for current and former NHS staff to sing together virtually, because I think they're all missing having their extracurricular music as well, which I think is a great shout.
And let's not forget the CBSO as well, who are going to be offering 5,000 tickets.
Yes.
When we return, at whatever point we return to some sort of normality, they're going to be offering 5,000 tickets to frontline NHS workers, which is, again, a wonderful thing to do. And as we're recording this on a Thursday, we're all going to be out at the front clapping, showing our support. Anybody going to be playing any instruments? No?
I haven't
Kazoos?
Yet.
Kazoos?
Thought about it.
Trumpets?
Maybe tonight's the night.
Yeah, I could get the harmonica. I can't play the harmonica. But...
drag the organ out.
Oh, God. But yeah, we'll do something.
Michael, over to you. What news have you got to bring us?
Well, you're right in that the future feels very unknown for artists and companies and venues. And so the ENO have got a plan for early September to do a sort of what they're calling a drive-in opera experience at Alexandra Palace. So they're going to put on 90-minute versions of La Boheme and a family-friendly version of The Magic Flute. And the idea is that you can drive up to it, you can cycle up to it, and the artists will perform in the grounds of Alexandra Palace at a safe distance from each other. So it sort of begins a sort of communal experience beyond this sort of online experience that we're all so familiar with. So it's sort of hopefully the beginning of a kind of coming together in a live situation, which we're also missing. So that's planned for early September, ENO.
That's a brilliant idea.
Fantastic. That's a great idea.
See how it goes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, drive-in is not really something that we've embraced much in this country, is it? Drive-in stuff.
No, maybe this is the time. I feel like they often say that after when concerts do resume, they might have to miss out quite like have every second seat empty in order to kind of keep social distance. But actually, that will really impact the kind of the profits that can be made by the orchestras and concert halls. So actually, something like that's really innovative. I like it.
And also, my problem with all of this, though, is one does go to a concert for a shared experience.
Definitely.
You know, sitting next to somebody and sort of feeling the vibes of the people around you during a performance is something that makes it so much more special than sitting on your own listening to music, which is in itself is a very special experience. But the live adds this extra frisson, and it's going to be very hard to replicate that when you're having people sitting in every other row and every other seat, or in their own cars, you know.
Audience members are going to get even less tolerant of coughing during intervals and movements, aren't they now?
Well, if anything comes out of this, it may be that people will not be coughing during concerts anymore.
The dream.
I mean, you know, people do not cough under normal circumstances all the time, and they go into a concert hall and suddenly people are coughing the whole time.
Yeah. Maybe they'll feel too guilty.
You don't find walking down. Exactly. And I think that people will just have to sort of gird up their loins and not cough. You know, I mean, let's not beat about the bush here. It can be very irritating. But yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. So shall we move on to this month's magazine then?
Let's
talk about the June issue.
This month's magazine.
So before we talk about the June issue, I think we're very keen to stress we're producing the magazine as usual. Subscribers will get their magazine delivered in the normal way. But we know that many of you can't get to the shops to pick up your issues. So what we're doing is we're offering all non-subscribers a totally risk-free, no strings way to get the next three issues to your door with absolutely free delivery. So all you have to do is visit www.classical-music.com/offer. And you'll be able to make a one-off payment without setting up a direct debit. And you'll save 15% on the newsstand price. So, bonus indeed. Right. The BBC Music Magazine Awards. As I said earlier, we should have been at King's Place celebrating. But we are celebrating in the magazine. And we've got our awards. And what a wonderful lineup. I think it's time to reveal, and in fact we do reveal on the cover of the magazine, that the recording of the year has been given to the Gabrielli Consort and Players recording of Purcell's opera King Arthur. It's such a wonderful, scintillating, compelling rendition. We're going to hear one of the arias, one of the fantastic, innovative arias that Purcell wrote. It's the Frost Scene, sung splendidly by bass baritone Ashley Richards.
What power art thou from below, hast made me rise unwieldy and slow, from beds of everlasting snow.
So that was the Frost Scene from Purcell's King Arthur in a wonderful recording by the Gabrielli Consort and Players of Purcell's King Arthur. And it's won not only the Opera Award, but Recording of the Year. But as we said, there's a wonderful roster of winners that are publicised in this month's magazine and online. So please go to classical-music.com/awards. Also pick up a copy of the June issue and you can read all about them. Any highlights for you, Freya, in the awards that you can exclusively reveal?
Well, I think the recording that I've had most on since I've been working from home, and which my housemates have also been enjoying through the walls, is Edmund Finnis's The Air Turning, which is on NMC, and he has won Premier of the Year. It's just these amazing kind of soundscapes, and he's very sort of intellectual about the way he views music. It's brilliant. It properly takes you away. So that's been exactly what I've needed since we've been in lockdown.
Marvellous. What about you, Michael?
Well, do you know what? Because I spoke to the director, the DVD of the year, which is Vanessa, which was Glyndebourne's productions last summer, it's an absolutely stunning, stunning production on discs. Obviously, it would have been great live, but Keith Warner, who directed it, actually said to me, do you know what? It works almost even better as a film experience, just because of the nature of the work. It's quite a cinematic opera, like a sort of film noir, sort of Hitchcockian sort of drama thriller. So yeah, it comes across beautifully on DVD. So yeah, I've been looking at clips of that and enjoying that since we named it as our DVD winner.
Fantastic. And on every single winner has been interviewed exclusively for the magazine. So you can read interviews with all the winners. You can read about all the winners in the June issue. Go online, listen to clips. Most importantly, go out and listen to these recordings. Go and buy copies. Go and support these wonderful artists who need us at this time more than ever. And there's also an exclusive interview with the wonderful mezzo-soprano Jamie Barton, who is the winner of our Music Personality of the Year Award, not only for her magnificent voice, but for championing of minority groups on stage and also LGBT rights. And so she's just a wonderful presence in the opera world, drawing attention to all sorts of groups of people and also, of course, shining a light on opera with just her huge personality. She's just a wonderful, wonderful singer.
Cheers. Total firecracker.
Absolutely. Yes, I would say. But Michael, you're going to tell us about the recording of the month, which is in the June issue. So away from the awards, but the recording of the month. And there's actually a link, isn't there, between the awards and the recording?
There is. So this month's recording of the month is from Víkingur Ólafsson, the brilliant Icelandic pianist, who, of course, was our winner of Recording of the Year last year at the awards. This is his follow-up to that amazing Bach disc that he did. This disc is repertoire by Debussy and Rameau. And it's just the most gorgeous thing. Much like Bach, you know, his playing is like breathing. It's the most beautiful, naturalistic performance. And with this disc, he's returning to the era of Bach, of course, but sort of from a different perspective with Rameau. And he's pairing the works with those by Debussy. And I spoke to him and he talked to me about this idea of it being piano music as theatre. So this is music which is telling stories. And he also said to me that he's trying to show Rameau as the futurist he thinks he was, and also trying to prove that Debussy's roots actually do lie in the French Baroque, despite him being around, obviously, many, many, many years later. And so, yeah, he's done it again. And this is a beautiful track. This is Olufsen's own arrangement of Rameau's The Arts and the Hours. So that was The Arts of the Hours, performed by Viking Olufsen, and that's released on Deutsche Grammophon.
I absolutely love his touch. The piano is just such a velvety, beautiful touch. I remember when he came to the awards and he played the second movement of the Bach Trio Sonata No. 4, which is featured on his Bach album. It was just something very special, and I'm not quite sure how he manages to get such a different tone from the piano than anybody else does. There's the magical depth of tone. It's extraordinary.
Mm. Yeah.
And the Debussy and the Rameau go so well together, but they're the perfect combination.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant disc.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Freya, what else have we got in the mag?
Something totally different now. So this is a great piece by Claire Jackson on the relationship between classical music and fashion. And there's always been kind of an intersection between those artistic forms. As we are a very stylish team, naturally. no one could tell from my chic lockdown uniform.
I was going to say, for the naked CS.
I have got a very large stack of Vogue magazines to my left, so it's fine. But yeah, some artists are kind of renowned for their style. You've got obviously people like Yuja Wang, who's super glamorous. She wears these amazing stilettos and kind of bodycon dresses. But then you also have people like Steve Reich, who's renowned for his baseball cap. Don't think you ever see him without that. And Claire kind of delves into the partnerships and collaborations that have taken place over the years with kind of sponsorship and things like that. And then some go totally the other way. Some artists go kind of reject that and, you know, have James Rhodes, who wears his jeans and a T-shirt, and Nigel Kennedy, who always wears his football strip. But yeah, I think the piece came out of Sheku Kanamason, who's now being, I think, officially dressed by Paul Smith, fellow Nottingham lad. And he does look exceptionally good on his new cover of his new album. It's a great outfit. But yeah, so Claire kind of delves back into the history of opera and costume design, and the relationship between fashion and music kind of goes back as far as we can remember. But 17th century, obviously you've got Leopold Mozart dressing his family on tour. So yeah, it's like my dream combination, really, as an avid follower
of fashion.
It's a really
nice piece, isn't it?
Yeah.
I suppose musicians have to sort of feel comfortable in the clothes that they're performing in as well. You know, there's a picture in the feature with Cameron Carpenter, the organist, wearing his jewel, sort of bejeweled, quite high-heeled shoes. But of course, you know, organists need the high heel to pedal more efficiently. Mm. But you know, if shoes are the focus of the audience sometimes, well, why not shove a couple of gemstones on them, you know?
Well, absolutely.
Definitely.
And the piece talks about Anne-Sophie Mutter as well in her off-the-shoulder gowns. And I recall going to see her in concert in Munich last year. And because it was a home crowd, every single new frock she wore, the crowd just went wild. Because it was obviously part of her thing. So each new one had a massive, like, reaction from the crowd. It was just brilliant.
Yeah, it makes a difference. I mean, you know, blokes, though, you know, there's always a temptation simply to come on in something black or a penguin suit, or, you know, that there isn't a huge amount of imagination from the male side of things. Mm. You know, women feel they can wear these great big drums. I mean, another organist, Gillian Weir, you know, she used to come out in these great big dresses draping down the back of the bench, you know, she just sweep them behind her, you know, whereas the blokes shuffle on in their, you know, trousers and shirt and off you go, Bob's your uncle. Mm. And I think actually there is room for a little bit more flamboyance.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Well, Claire did mention, and it is true, and I kind of have subconsciously noticed this, that there are fewer kind of tails, like penguin suits being worn on stage, and men are choosing to wear slightly, marginally jazzy, more jazzy outfits, but they still got a way to come. Need to get more rhinestones.
They do.
Look at the Mirachi. Go back
good.
To that.
Yes, indeed.
Exactly.
So that was our June issue. Much, much, much more in there besides. So do go out and buy a copy. If you can't, please take advantage of this wonderful offer for it's £15.27, I think it is, for three issues delivered free to your door. Of course, the magazine is available on iPad. It's available on other online sort of news agents, if you like Exact Editions and that sort of thing. So go and explore. Right, it's time for First Listen. So before we kick off with sharing our favourite new recordings, please tell us what you've been listening to in lockdown. Let us know what's been keeping you company, what's comforted you, what's uplifted you. Email us music@classical-music.com. We could publish you in our Music to My Ears page. How exciting. So, Freya, what have you brought to the table today? What are you going to introduce us to?
Okay, so this is a new album with music by Jose Cerebre, and it's kind of a whole selection of orchestral works, and his flute concerto is kind of the centrepiece of this disc, performed by Sharon Bazzali with the Australian Chamber Orchestra under Richard Tognetti. So we're going to listen to the third movement, Fantasia, from his flute concerto with tango. So that was the third movement, Fantasia, from Jose Cerebre's Flute Concerto with Tango, recorded on Bis. And I just think her tone is so crystal clear and full of character. She's one of my absolute favourite flautists, and her breath control is frankly quite ludicrous. And this was a great discovery for me, because I kind of knew of Cerebre as a conductor, but I was fairly new to his compositions. And he's got this such colourful style with his orchestral works, and the other works on this disc are equally brilliant. Actually, it was quite hard to pick which one to play today, but he also has the symphonic Bach variations, which is piano concerto, and he's also got two tango inspired pieces for orchestra where you can really hear his kind of like Latin American influences. I just think it's utterly brilliant.
You think about Jose Cerebre, such a wonderful man, but he's never really wanted to tie himself down to one single orchestra, which I think is probably why we don't hear as much from him, you know, publicity-wise, because he has tended to sort of wander around different orchestras, which in a way makes him more brilliant, because wherever he goes, he has to adapt and he has to fit in. And I think he's also an underrated composer. I think he's, as this demonstrates, I think he's a fantastic sort of magician on the manuscript paper. Mm. I think there's so much colour in those pieces.
Mm. And it's accessible as well, his music. I feel like it can be enjoyed by all. It really transports you.
Yeah, it really, really does. Michael, what have you got?
So I've been listening to a disc called Amour Toujours. Which translates as love always, everyone. It's actually really great fun. It's by, and actually one of the reasons I love it the most, is by a group called Smoking Josephine, which is just the best name. So this is actually a string quintet, and the disc is a sort of gathering of works that have been especially arranged for these five string players. And you just get a sense from it that this is a group of women. It's a group of five women, by the way, who get a kick out of performing this repertoire and making music together. And that joy really comes across. So one of my favourite tracks is this. This is called Liebesfreud, which is from Fritz Kreisler's Three Old Viennese Dances. And the disc is on Naive. So that was the brilliant group Smoking Josephine playing Fritz Kreisler's Liebesfreude, and the disc is available on Naive.
Marvellous. Marvellous. Well, my choice is maybe slightly more traditional, but it's no less fun, I have to say. So American-Israeli pianist Enor Barnaton has been taking us through Beethoven's piano concertos on pentatone. This album is interesting in as much as there's a wonderful recording of The Emperor, number 5, but that's not the star of the show. What is the star of the show is the choral fantasy for piano, orchestra, and choir, which is just so thrillingly performed because it's one of those pieces sort of falls in the shadow of the Ninth Symphony. Mm. But there's also the Beethoven Violin Concerto arranged by the composer for piano. And what's so wonderful is that he puts in these little sort of harmonic modifications. And you can hear the piece ever so slightly adapted, and he writes it for piano, but it's obviously after the violin concerto. So it's the textures are a little bit more delicate than they would normally be in the piano concertos. And Enor Barnaton is a sort of a player for whom sort of less is more, if you like. He really gives it a lovely sheen without going over the top. And it's with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields with Alan Gilbert. So everything is just so beautifully shaped and articulated. Anyway, so we're going to hear the final movement of the Beethoven Violin Concerto, arranged for piano by the composer, performed by Enor Barnaton with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, conducted by Alan Gilbert. So that was pianist Enor Barnaton and the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields performing the final movement of Beethoven's Violin Concerto arranged for the piano. And that's on pentatone, and it's out now. So that actually brings us to the end of this month's podcast. Our jingles, each one inspired by a different English choral composer, were written by Christopher Maxim. And our podcast is produced in Bristol by Jack Bateman and Ben Uatt. So it's goodbye from me, Michael and Freya.
Bye. Goodbye.
And there'll be another group of the BBC Music Magazine team to chat next month about our July issue. So until then, it's goodbye from me as well. Goodbye.
The BBC Music Magazine podcast.